Hello, everybody. I'm Michael Monaco.
And I'm Bobby Salvis, and we are the Hazmat Guys, bringing you knowledge and insight to make your job a little bit easier and safer.
Let's take a minute to hear about today's sponsors.
Hey, Mike, let me ask you, have you ever heard about the bar method?
Have not, but it sure sounds like fun. What does it mean?
Well, probably not what you think it stands for, but what they mean is blot, apply, and remove. It's the new way to remember the steps to conduct hybrid decon.
Okay, I'm listening.
Well, with the threats continuing to evolve, our SOPs do as well. And First Line Technology introduced us the BAR method. It's backed by science and real-world application. This method of blot, apply, and remove is faster, safer, and more effective method to decon.
Is it going to work for both wet and dry?
Well, yeah, absolutely. The methodology forces you to consider the who, what, when, and where before determining what materials you will be used to carry out the necessary actions. It helps you to tailor your decon to the threats you're facing.
This could be exactly the thing I need to train my team on. How can I get more info?
Well, First Line's EDS kit has everything you need to conduct a hybrid decon for large or small missions. To learn about the kit and how to apply this BAR method, visit www.firstlinetech.com/EDS. You know, when an environmental emergency occurs, who do you call to assist with managing your liability? First Call Environmental maintains 40-hour OSHA-trained personnel and specialized response equipment in over 20 locations throughout the eastern United States. From minor petroleum releases to overturned tankers, First Call is ready to respond 24/7. Call today and learn how the First Call difference can protect your company. Call 1-800-646-1290.
Let's get to the show.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Hazmat Guys, episode 291. We are back on video. Go check out our YouTube channel at the Hazmat Guys on YouTube. We're going to be doing a select amount of videos, and you can see these beautiful punims up on your screen, whatever side that be. I'm Bobby Salvis, and I'm back with Mike. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Bob.
We are going to continue our march down the aerosols path, doing aerosols part deux.
But do,
as they say in France.
And we really, if you have any additional, like we said in the first episode, we're learning about this. You are somehow an expert in this, you have a field in it, you've studied it, and there's stuff that we either need to be corrected on, or you want to add to, or something that we don't even know about. Like, we're not afraid to say that we know that there's stuff that we don't know.
Totally.
We're more than happy to have you come on and talk about this, but I guess we should just keep on trucking.
Yeah. So we were starting to go into the topic, but we want to kind of know, how do we measure aerosols? We were talking about their impacts as far as our lungs. The finer they are, the more pervasive they are into our bodies. So now the question is, how do we measure the aerosols? And there are several methods of aerosol concentration. Right. So environmental science and environmental health people, they use the mass concentration, which is the mass of a particulate matter per unit volume. So like, and this is, you hear this commonly with the solids in suspension, like, and surprisingly mercury as well. But that's a story for another day. But if I had a dust, right, and I can gather all that dust that's in this volume and put it on a scale, I can actually measure a weight on this thing. But I have it in a volume. So you'll see like grams per cubic meter or micrograms per cubic or milligrams or pounds per cubic yard. It could be anything. But basically what you have is two things. It's like miles per hour. You have weight by volume, right? So there's another common way. It's called the number concentration. Now, this is another parameter of this where it's the number of particles per unit volume. Right. And so this is going to be like the number per cubic meter, the number per cubic centimeter. There is a difference between what I'm saying. One is the mass that is held within a volume.
Right.
And the other one is the number of particles per unit volume.
And there's actually even a third way.
There's a third.
When not that they, well, it's a little bit, it's concerning when they talk about where it's going to land in the lungs, right? We talked before about all the different sizes. The diameter starts to now make a difference when you start talking about like health effects. So there's all these different ways to kind of like measure it, because you can have a couple of particles with high mass, and it's just, it gets, the whole thing gets really kind of confusing. You're trying to figure out which one you want to look at and what the most problematic measurement is going to be. Some different meters that are out there. For first responders, you want to learn more about the 908. I highly recommend going and checking out their video on it. Very, very interesting. Very interesting piece of equipment for first responders. Outside of the world of first responders, kind of that environmental health, that environmental science, there seems to be a whole different slew of meters. And the first one is an aerosol mass spectrometer, which I guess is kind of similar to what 908 has, using the high pressure mass spec. It uses mass spec to analyze the ingredients of what is suspended in the air. It can detect liquids and solids that are suspended, and they often will range from 3 nanometers to 100 micrometers. So we see here the difference between the first responder world, right, where Mark was saying that our concern is the 2 to 10 area, but in the science world of aerosols, we're actually able to measure from 3 nanometers to 100 micrometers.
And I'm sure there's going to be a couple of people saying, well, who really cares, right? This is why it kind of bent my head a little bit, because we have meters that are designed to pick up vapors, right? Which are the things that come off of liquids or gases, things that are in that phase already. But when you aerosolize something, your meters don't pick that up. They're designed for vapor or gas detection. It's a very key point in this thing, because there is not, to my knowledge, anything that does aerosols true to form. They might take that aerosol, and I'm not talking about the M8, paper or the M9 tape. I'm not talking about that, like just detection. I'm talking about actual identification of what's going on, right?
Well, so I think that's kind of what the mass spec is doing.
What it's doing.
Yeah,
it's the way it works, and I don't want to paraphrase what he was saying, but basically, this thing sniffs, and it saturates a pad, and then it flashes it with heat. If I raise the temperature, I raise the vapor pressure, and therefore I can read it just like normal. And it does this over and over and over. So this, this type of technology is used in like measuring pollution, right? Where we have a particulate pollution. It's able to distinguish between thousands of compounds in a single particle. Right? Because a particle can have many compounds part of it. And it's almost real-time mass spectroscopy that can analyze, as the name would suggest, in real time. So the other thing is offline mass spectroscopy, which is when we have to – this is how New York City does it. We have these big fans that sit in the subways, and they look like stainless steel cases. All they have is a fan and a household filter, and they just pull air through. And then once a day, once every other day, somebody comes around and collects that filter and then runs back to the lab and analyzes it and see if anything's going on in the subways.
Yeah. So that is definitely, I'm sure over the next 10 years, we're going to see kind of a growth yes. in this concept of aerosol detection. The next one is called in this field a differential mobility analyzer. We kind of know this as an IMS, ion mobile spectroscopy, that is commonly used in our first responder world for chemical warfare agent detection. So very similar in how it works, right? It's going to take the aerosol, it's going to ionize it, it's going to try to break it down a little bit further, and then take those broken bits after they've been ionized and push them down a charged tube. And depending on how long it takes to get from one end of the tube to the other, or one end of the tube until it deflects, it's going to give either a chemical in kind of our world, it gives the chemical. And I believe in the aerosol, it's going to kind of give you a particle size. It's going to give you an idea of how big this aerosol is.
Now, the next one is the electrical aerosol spectrometer. Or an EAS. Now, I am not familiar with this one, but I'm going to read what it says about it. It's a technique for measurement of the number size distribution of an aerosol using a combination of electrical charging and multiple solid state electrometer detectors. The technique combines both diffusion and field charging regimes to cover a diameter range of 10 nano to 10 micrometers. Right. Huh. So 10 microns.
So here we kind of, we've really quickly gone over 3 meters that do three very different things.
Very different things.
Right. One is the ingredients. The other is the size. And the other is the, could you say the density of particles in an area?
Yeah. The randomness. It sounds like this one does the randomness. You know, it says it's a number size distribution.
Right. So it would have to be like, all right, I've got 10 particles in this little area.
Okay, of this size.
I have 50 particles of this size.
Of which you'd probably have like a bell curve of commonality, and then you have the outliers on the outside, I would think.
Yeah. All right. So then we go on to the aerodynamic aerosol classifier and an aerodynamic particle sizer. And this is going to, it is a measurement technique for classifying aerosolized particles according to the aerodynamic diameter. So it looks like this is another size thing.
Yeah. And this technique allows online size classification of particles without requiring them to be electrically charged, which is, it allows us to advantageously select particles within a narrow range of aerodynamic diameters.
The next one is going to be a condensation particle counter. This is a particle counter that detects and counts aerosolized particles by first enlarging them by using the particles as a, kind of a nucleic center to create droplets in these supersaturated gases. So, you know, we were kind of talking before about these particles having the ability to condensate onto, you know, from a gas or vapor into the condensation, into the particle. This is basically making them bigger and then having the ability, now you have a big particle to count it as it goes by. So again, probably we've got 50 counts per this, I don't know, meter cubic foot of air.
That sounds very scientific.
It's very scientific. This is all very scientific.
Another one, and probably the last one, is the aerosol particle mass analyzer, an AP. This is a measurement technique for classifying aerosol particles according to the mass to charge ratio. This technique exists for classifying or selecting aerosol particles in the sub 1000 nanometer range according to the electrical mobility using devices such as a differential mobility analyzer. These things, you don't see these things on the street. The IMS you see, the mass spec you see. The thing I like kind of about the mass spec is it only requires another replacement piece. You know,
the 908.
Boom, it's on.
A different head, and you're good to go.
So that's a huge capability for this. Go ahead.
How can we protect ourselves from aerosols, right? That then becomes the next question. And we talk about the 908, not for any other reason, guys, than it has the ability to detect the aerosols, right? And as far as I know, there is no other meter out there that's going to give you an idea that there's an aerosol in the air. And if you watch the show, you can the webinar that they did, you can actually see how the meter lets you know that there's an aerosol in the air. And that's the first way to protect yourself from an aerosol, because the only way to keep it from getting in your lungs is to wear respiratory protection. And we see respiratory protection in the form of our lowest rated respirator, which is going to be our N95, to then our P100, to then our APRs, to our PAPRs, and then finally our SCBA. So our entire gamut of stuff that we're generally trained to put on should protect us from aerosols. Now, the caveat to this, right, is that let's say we had an aerosolized chemical.
Okay.
And I went ahead and I threw my N95 or even my P100, all right? If that P100 is not specifically designed to stop both the chemical or the vapor as well as the aerosol, it's not providing me with the protection that I need, right? Because I can stop the droplet from going into my lungs, but now the droplet sits on my respirator and now it vaporizes and now I'm breathing in the vapor. So although I've protected myself from the aerosol, right, the large particle, I haven't protected myself from the chemical physical properties of whatever it is that's off-gassing. Right.
Yes. That's the big crux.
I think that's an important, especially when we're dealing with liquid aerosols, is a really important to understand that even though we can protect ourselves with an N95 from the particle, we still have to consider the property in our PPE selection, not just respiratory, but, you know, full body protection as well.
You know, when you're out there facing the unknown, you want the MX908 in your toolkit. Now, it's packed with the sensitivity and selectivity of high-pressure mass spectrometry. This is a detection device that fits right in your hands. You can detect and identify chemical targets from street drugs to explosives and ticks to chemical warfare agents, including Novichoks, all with the same tool. The MX908 can detect and identify threats in any state and is now the only field tool available for real-time aerosol analysis. The MX908 gives you the rapid, actionable intelligence you need to make decisions faster and ensure the safety of everybody involved. To get more information about the MX908, including technical papers, video demos, and target lists, go to info.908devices.com/hazmat, and then hazmat is all in one word. With the MX908, you get real-time detection of real-time threats. Check it out at info.908devices.com/hazmat.
So where do we typically find this? I would say one of the first ones that comes to mind is fires, right? If we have a fire, that smoke is, you know, it has fluid dynamics almost, and I'm not saying this in a technical definition way, but smoke moves almost like it's a fluid.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it has this, like, fluidity to it. And within that fluidity, you have particles of all types. You have chemicals in suspension. You have formaldehyde. You have carbon, hydrogen cyanide. You have a million different chemicals all in solution, all mixed into this, yeah, it's a fluid. I would say it's more of a, I know it's just technically a smoke, but it's, I think it almost in a fluid manner.
Yeah. I mean, cause think about, like, when you have, right, you have a really nasty, hydrocarbon burning, and you, like, how mesmerizing is it to watch the plume of smoke go into the air and change and mix with the wind, and, you know, it puffs out, and, like, those, everything that you see, the reason you can't see through the smoke is because of the particulates, the aerosolized particulates that are in the air. Yep. And if you have a big enough fire, I mean, geez, you see some of these, you see some of these wildfires, you see some of these large factory fires, and it will behave just like a fluid, like a gas. Like, it rises up, it hits a ceiling, it can spread out in the ceiling. Yep. It goes with the wind. Like, smoke does all those things. That's all classifications of aerosols. That's where plume modeling really starts to come in, is when you're looking at where is this going to go? What is it going to do? How is it going to react? And then ultimately, when it comes to smoke and fires, it will eventually come back down to the ground. And we know this from fires involving radioactive substances, right? Fires like in Chernobyl or in other parts of the world where you had that those radioactive particles in the smoke. They rose up. They were in suspension. They were aerosolized. And then over time, they start to settle back down to the ground. And because it's radiation, we can now very specifically detect when it went up, how far it went, and where it landed. So there's a lot of aerosolization in fires that we don't think about as aerosols. But hey, look, you go back from a fire, the shit that comes out of your nose, right? You're picking black stuff out. That's all from aerosols. And I'm going to guess that the stuff that we're picking out of our nose is going to be greater than 10 microns.
Yes.
Right. And then the stuff that we start hacking up, you know, a day later, 2 days later, that's going to be within that like 0.5 to 10 microns because it's landing kind of in our bronchioles. Yeah, deeper. And then the stuff that ends up killing us is going to be the really tiny stuff that we can't get out of our lungs. So fire is really good example. Pepper spray, hairspray, spray paint. One of the things that we talked about with the 908 is that, you know, we don't really have a great way of doing pepper spray, of identifying pepper spray. And pepper spray in and of itself is exactly what an aerosol is, right? You have a suspended particle in the air. Hairspray, spray paint, all of that stuff is all considered an aerosol. So we can have the hazard from the pepper spray. We could have the hazard from the propellant in the air. We could have the hazard of whatever's in the hairspray itself. So lots of different hazards going on all at once.
Yeah. And you know what the weird thing is, and this is one of the things that we talked about in the show with Dr. Norman, is that you look at pepper spray and you look at hairspray. One of them is a aerosolized flammable and one is an aerosolized toxic. Yet they both share the same propellant to get them out. And so You have the propellant, which in its of itself is a flammable. And then you added on an additional flammable into there, which changes the parameters of each one, right? Because they kind of mesh and they do different things. But the pepper spray is not only a flammable, it's a toxic. And then when the flammable evaporates, now it's just a toxic. Totally. Guys, if you're not picking up what we're laying down here, this is a new – you have to think about hazmat. I'm serious. I'm thinking about things totally different now.
Multi-level, right? Because then we've talked about before, things are toxic before they're flammable. So now that flammable material that was the propellant is also toxic before it's flammable. So you don't have a flammable – it's there's a lot going on with – just that hairspray, pepper spray example.
Yeah, even explosives, right? Explosives, you don't think of them like this. You think of explosives as like a solid, but explosives give off vapors. They can be aerosolized. I mean, we talked about this a little bit in the show with TATP and what was the other one? That wasn't Petten. Another one he mentioned. Well, this is another reason why you have to go and watch the show.
Yes.
This is another reason. But yeah, explosives is another thing that you can utilize this thing on.
And the substance itself doesn't even have to be what you would normally consider an explosive, right? You can have aerosolized particles that react with oxygen, like concrete dust can explode, grain silos explode. So they have this additional property of being able to react with oxygen, very similar to like a gas. You okay? You there?
Oh, yeah, man.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Keep plugging away, man.
Okay. So we go from explosives and then we kind of enter the confined space arena. And the confined space arena is really going to be much more of a an aerosolized. The aerosolization can come from us kicking up stuff that really is not normally disturbed. There's aerosolizations that are created over time, dusts, If you're dealing in a factory, if you're in an industrial setting, and they eventually settle down, we go in as a confined space rescue, and we end up kicking up a lot of these aerosolized particles, or a lot of these particles that then become aerosolized. They start to move in a fluid way with the air, with the atmosphere.
Yeah. You can even have industry, right? Dust generators. We were talking about this, is that we were talking about the corn silos or even sugar silos, or these silos that you would think are innocuous. They are not flammable. And however, because of the surface area, because of the properties of that particle being able to stay in suspension and whatnot, you could have explosives, you know, explosions. So like corn or wheat or grain silos. Definitely.
In fact, if I'm not mistaken, isn't the rating for things that are intrinsically safe, right? That it's like, oh, it's intrinsically safe, like 1, 2, A, B, C, D, right?
Yeah, it's like 1, 2, 3, A, B, C, D.
Yeah, those different numbers and letters, they not only are going to correspond to like flammable atmospheres, but they're also corresponding to aerosols, you know, particles aerosols, suspended dusts in the air. So if you ever enter a facility and it's like, hey, this is a particulate warning or an intrinsically safe sensitive area to the standard of blah, 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 1, 2, 3. And I don't know the standard off the top of my head. That may be something we talk about in another show. But take a step back and be like, oh, they're talking about like particles and things that are sensitive. There might be something in the air that I need to put on respiratory protection, right? Because if we're going to keep our electronics from interacting with the aerosol, then we pretty much know that there's an aerosol in the air. So I should be wearing appropriate protection for that. So that's a heads up right there when you have those warning signs in industrial facilities, which if you teach in industry, you see those signs everywhere. When you start to walk into machine rooms, when you start to walk into the actual processing areas. Next, the place that we see a lot of aerosols is going to be agricultural application of chemicals, pesticides, fertilizers, crop dusters. These are all work off an aerosolation property. They're going to take a liquid, they're going to compress it, put it through a tiny nozzle, and create really small particles. They're going to fly over crops, and hopefully over time, those small particles settle down onto the plants. Very, very effective way of distributing a small amount of liquid over a very large area. That can also be an effective way of a chemical attack. Is that same kind of concept. So when we start talking about dispersion devices, aerosolizing a liquid or aerosolizing a solid, like as an anthrax or a fentanyl or a carfentanil, it really starts to become something that we should think about when responding, especially if we get to the point that we have a device that can let us know that we're dealing with some kind of an aerosol.
And we'll wrap it up with spraying for pests, which kind of goes right down where Mike was going with that, because this is the agricultural application of chemicals. But this is now we're throwing an organophosphate or a nerve agent in a medium to transport it for effective distribution, right? So we take our fungicide, our rodenticide, whatever it is, dissolve it maybe into a solution of alcohol or whatever medium we require, and we throw it out there. And eventually the medium removes itself by evaporation or chemical reaction or whatever it might be, and now your toxic is left there. So all of these methods, all of these types are applications you're going to see on an emergency scene. I feel strongly, like Mike said before, that this aerosolization methodology in metering is going to be coming to a theater near you pretty soon.
Well, that wraps up another episode of the Hazmat Guys.
You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and our YouTube channel at The Hazmat Guys, and take a moment to call our comment hotline at 843-628-1484.
And we are always looking forward to your feedback about information or interesting incidents that you were a part of, so send us a note at feedback@thehazmatguys.com.
Remember, guys, don't just get on the job, get into the job.